If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
L. Yup,
that's who you think it is. The Grimace mug. The Hello Kitty keychain. Barbie herself. For a limited time, your favorite McDonald's collectibles filled with memories and magic are now on collectible cups. Get one of six when you order a collector's meal at McDonald's with your choice of a Big Mac or 10-piece McNuggets. Come get your cup while you still can. And participate in McDonald's for a limited time while supplies last.
This is The Stage Right Side with James Whiteside, where we'll dive deep into the dark world of dance and come up on the bright side. Jake Roxander, welcome to The Stage Right Side with James Whiteside.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yay! We are truly on The Stage Right Side, as I have broken into yet another of my colleagues' dressing rooms. Today, I'm recording from Hiseo's dressing room, principal dancer Hiseo, and she doesn't know I'm here, so I apologize. I guarantee you she's not listening to my podcast.
She doesn't have to know.
We'll never tell. So thank you, Elizabeth. I call her Queen Elizabeth, the first and only. So Jake Roxander is a soloist with American Ballet Theatre. He is, one might say, a breakout star of American Ballet Theatre. He has been bringing absolute delight to audiences in everything he's done in the past couple of seasons at American Ballet Theatre, and I'm a huge fan of his dancing. But I hate him as a person. No, I'm kidding.
Yes, as a person, he's awful.
So Jake, you're in stage makeup right now. For those of you watching the YouTube video, this will live on YouTube as well. Don't forget to go check it out and get me some ad money. You are in full stage makeup. You are beat for the gods. What are you doing in Like Water for Chocolate this week?
So I am doing Ranch Worker in Like Water for Chocolate.
And that's a core part, correct?
Well, technically, Royal Ballet was actually a soloist part.
Okay.
But it is kind of a corps de ballet part in the sense that you're in a group and
how
you
many
do
people?
All of the group dances. It's 8 people.
8 people. Do you have to move the set?
You do. You have to move a couple tables.
That's one of my least favorite things to have to do as a dancer, is when you have to be also the stagehand.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, I get it, and it makes sense for this show, so good on ya. But you do, as a soloist, you have to do core parts sometimes, right? What's the, like, rule there?
It's a little confusing, but generally with, like, a new contract, I'm still kind of learning the ropes, so to speak. But when you get a new contract, it's like there's a limited amount of time that they can use you for corps de ballet if they still need you.
It's like usually a year or two, right?
I think so, yes. So after that certain amount of time passes, then you're more exclusively a soloist, and you're more senior. And the only other thing I'm doing this week is Lead Revolutionary. So
oh, yeah,
really
that's
fun.
Fun. I love that dance.
Yeah, it was my favorite thing in the whole ballet when we saw it in London.
And you haven't done it yet, or have you?
No, I haven't done it.
Okay, this we've got a debut.
Debut.
They're still happening. I'm going to turn the air conditioning off because it's noisy and it's freezing.
Don't like
here.
That.
And we got to keep you warm for the performance. There we go. Oh, my gosh, I'm freezing. All they love to keep these dressing rooms absolutely sub-zero. And now you can probably hear us better. So what else have you danced this season?
Oh, man. A bunch of things. Lenski was another debut. I was, like, super honored to do that. That was a lot of fun. And I felt like it really stretched me in a lot of ways, more than just my arabesque.
And he's got jokes.
Oh, yes. So Lenski, I did Benno in Swan Lake.
That's the patois guy who's who's Prince Siegfried's let's say best friend. I'm winking into the camera for all of you out there. They're best friends.
So I did that. I did Neapolitan as well in Swan Lake. Romeo and Juliet, I came back to Mercutio, which is one of my favorites. I'm leaving something out. Oh, like Water for Chocolate. I did the role Evans in First Act.
No, that's Wolfworks.
Oh, excuse me. Sorry. Yeah. Okay, I'll do that again. In Wolfworks,
boom,
I did the role of Evans in First Act.
And
the
that is
act.
Also Septimus's wink, wink, best friend.
Yes, this is...
I'm sensing a theme here.
Oh, yes.
We've got a lot of, like, yeah, never mind. I'm going to stop. And then, now you're doing Lead Revolutionary and Ranch Worker.
Ranch Worker. I think that's mostly everything. I know I've left a couple things out.
Is there a role that you've done that surprised you? Like, you didn't think you'd be doing it, but you have done it?
You know, honestly, Lenski was probably one of those.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure I would be just cast in a part like that, because I think Lenski is, sure, there's some hard technical steps. There's some pirouettes and some technique, so to speak. But a lot of it is your lines. There's a lot of arabesques, and there's a lot of, there's a really long potted at the beginning, and... I don't know. He's not a princely character, but he has a regalness to him that I think I'm oftentimes put into the other box of I can be seen as the trickster. You're a little shorter, so you can't really carry a role like that in a way. Of course, I don't. I try not to be that, and I think ABT has been very gracious with their opportunities and not putting me in a box, but that was one that took me by surprise.
Yeah, I mean, something you just said about being shorter and being part, like, sort of typecast in these, like, roles that are sort of viewed to be less regal. Like, how do you... I look at somebody like Hermann, who does Siegfried, who does Romeo, and I was having this conversation with some of my friends, actually, recently, because when you really think about the world we idealize and the one we want to live in, even in ballet, it's like I'm trying to say this really sensitively, you don't want to be in a, like, sizist, ageist, heightist society, even though ballet is an aesthetic art form.
Right.
And so, like, you getting opportunities like Lenski are really fantastic. Hermann doing Siegfried and Romeo is fucking awesome, pardon my French, and make complete sense to me. So what roles do you feel like have been historically done by essentially tall people that you want to get in on? And how tall are you? And if you don't, are you cool talking about this?
Yeah, of course. No, I'm happy to. I think it's a little bit of a, maybe stigma isn't the right word, but especially nowadays, this generation, it's like something that I think can be talked about a little bit more. So no, I'm
absolutely
happy to.
Hit it.
You know, Siegfried is definitely a dream role of mine. Swan Lake is
why
an iconic
is that
ballet.
Just because it's so iconic.
I think it's an iconic ballet. I think it was one of the first ABT DVDs I saw. I mean, I just grew up on a lot of that music.
Yeah.
And just that ballet itself. So like that would be just very special to me, I think. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of reasons, but that would be a really special one, and that is by definition a very princely role. So generally speaking, it's a lot of taller men that have done it, and you know, you're out there with white tights and white ballet shoes, and so, you know, you can't hide a lot of your weaknesses, and you know, you're it's like you said, ballet is an aesthetic art form, so it's like you want to be aesthetically pleasing and
do
carry yourself well. And,
like, what does that have to do with being tall or short?
Sorry, you know, that is not a good question for me because I don't really know.
Mm.
I think it's very funny that if you were to ask a random person, you know, on the street that maybe knew something about ballet and you said, who are some of the greatest ballet dancers to ever live? Generally speaking, people are going to say Mikhail Baryshnikov, Rudolf Nureyev, Nijinsky, you know, they're going to say
short,
like,
kings.
A lot of these people that are, you know, my height, if not a little shorter. Nureyev was, I think, an inch or two taller than me. But
and so me and all the other tall guys are disgusting, I guess.
You're awful. No, it's just one of those things where it's like it doesn't have to be a certain way. And,
I agree.
And I think, like, watching my brother do Siegfried, he brought something that was so fresh to the role. He brought an innocence.
Tell my listeners where your brother is.
Sure. My brother, Ashton Roxander, is a principal with the Philadelphia Ballet. And I was actually at the Philadelphia Ballet for a year before I joined Studio Company. It was then the Pennsylvania Ballet.
So you joined Studio Company at like 19 or something?
Yes.
And how old are you now?
So 22.
22. Okay.
Yes.
So were you only in Studio Company for 1 year then?
No, I was there for 2 years. It was one season. My first season in Studio Company was during COVID, so that was during the bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
So we had two bubbles where we did our repertoire and we filmed it, put it on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And then my second season, we were actually in the building. We were actually at 890 Broadway and working.
890 Broadway is the ABT Studios. It's in the Flatiron area of the city, and it's a pretty iconic building as far as the arts goes. A lot of Broadway shows are workshopped there, and television shows and musicians rehearse there. I remember Beyonce walked in one day and I almost lost my absolute mind. She got out of a Suburban and I was like, oh my God. Oh my God.
I did the same when I saw Hugh Jackman downstairs.
If I saw Hugh Jackman, I would be like, Hugh Jackman, let's go to where I want to be.
Yeah. It was crazy.
Yep.
I stopped in my tracks a little bit, and I just had to keep going.
Mm-hmm. I saw Tyrion, what's his name, Peter Dinklage once. He plays Tyrion Lannister in Game of Thrones. I've seen lots of people.
New York.
I love it. Okay, wait, back to the hard-hitting facts. So, Siegfried, for nostalgic and iconic reasons... Mm-hmm. Give me some other roles that you have your eye on that might not typically be given to a shorter dancer.
Albrecht is a great role.
Mm.
Albrecht is one of my favorites.
Mine too.
Giselle is a great ballet.
J'agree.
So that would be one. And yeah, it's like I said, it's just funny because it's like, for me personally, if I have like a image of Albrecht in my head, the first thing I think of is Mikhail Baryshnikov.
Me too.
Exactly. So it's funny that there's like that kind of, like I said, stigma there. I think, you know, taller guys are generally more quote unquote naturally better partners. So I think that's something that's like an idea that's been put into people's head.
Hmm.
Whether that's because they're just naturally heavier. Or, you know,
you
whatever.
Me fat?
I am calling you. No. There's a lot that goes goes into it. But, you know, I don't know. I like to think that stigma is going away, you know, bit by bit.
I don't think you're going to have any trouble getting parts, Jake. So
you never know. It's
daddy
just.
Chill.
It's a left foot, right foot journey. It's just
it
like,
also depends on the director and or the choreographer or whatever. So I think there people are going to have their, you know, preconceived notions about what they're looking for.
Right.
And you just better hope that it's people who are actively looking at things in a broader way than perhaps have been historically.
Right. And I mean, ultimately, it's just like, it's not about how tall you are or how flexible your ankles are or whatever, you know. It's about just what you bring to the table.
The like, spirit. Simply put.
Exactly. I mean, your onstage presence, your charisma, the way you portray the role, your acting, all of those things kind of mesh together. And then, of course, the technique and all of that stuff is just equally as important. But it's,
yeah, like,
it's
what are your priorities? Like, what would you say your top three priorities as a dancer are?
Oh, gosh, for a performance? I mean, the technique.
Mm. Gotta do the steps.
I think that's fair. Yeah. That one should be in there. I would say the acting, of course. And then, I guess all that's left is just the energy. Like, how much energy you bring to the part. And when you go up in energy and when you go down, I think that's hugely important. So it's not just about the acting, but it's about how much intention you give certain things.
Of course, yeah, I agree.
Especially in theater, because theater is not film. I see, you know, I've seen a lot of dancers in my life that are actually quite good actors, but it's almost as if they're pretending a camera's in front of their face. Mm. And, you know, in the rehearsal studio, it can actually be quite powerful, but then I've heard of, you know, people in the audience being like, oh, that person looked a little flat to me. Hmm. And you say, really? Hmm. But you realize how far away the audience is, and I think that that's something that, like we just keep talking about Misha. Like, he's a big hero of mine and a big influence on me. It's like, he could do things so over the top, and I think there's a lot of moments where you have to tone things down, but besides the acting and technique, your energy level is huge.
I totally agree with that, and I feel like just my personal spirit is energetic, and that is something that just naturally happens for me on stage. It's just like energy,
right?
But as like talking about Misha and that generation's theatrical style,
right?
It was a whole different ball game. In that, I don't know, people just acted differently. In the same way they acted differently in movies. Like, the general aesthetic of a time, it's like a time capsule, and it's preserved in ballet, in film, in television, in books, in everything. And I think when I look back on those performers, they do seem kind of melodramatic to me. But at the same time, I absolutely love it. And I think when audiences can get lost in the artist's choices,
right,
they feel a connection to that artist. That being said, I don't think it's appropriate to go ham for the purpose of going ham. I think artists, like in storytelling, have to be natural to them.
That's what I was kind of going to say, is like, the audience is going to feel what you're going to feel. So it's not necessarily like, if I do this like Misha, it's going to read the same way. Mm. It's like, that's not the case. You know, you have to take what's useful, discard what's not, and add what's uniquely your own to everything you do.
Mm. Well, I always think, too, you can't fully erase yourself.
No. Yeah. Yeah.
Also, sorry, I'm getting lost on a tangent here, but
okay.
When you think you're really slaying sometimes, like, you could be really lost emotionally in a piece or a full length or whatever it is, and you could be like losing your mind and like weeping on stage, and like it could look like literal garbanzo beans from the audience. And so it's all part of like learning, essentially, what works, what doesn't work, stagecraft, and all that beauty.
Yeah.
That's the end of my points. I have no other points. That's the end of the podcast.
Is it?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, God, okay. You're I was like, yes. Wow, that went by fast.
No, I'm kidding.
I said nothing.
Okay, so we've got Giselle and we've got Siegfried. What about choreographers that you haven't worked with that you'd really like to work with?
Oh, gosh. I don't know.
You're manifesting here, Jake. Get into it.
Oh, God. Okay. You know, Twyla's definitely one that I think is on most people's bucket list. I've danced quite a bit of her things before, but I've never actually worked with her in person.
So funny, I interviewed Chloe earlier today, and she said the same thing. She's really? Like, I really want to work with Twyla.
Yeah, it would be cool. I mean, it's like, I've already had so many moments, even now, like, doing your podcast, where it's like, you know, if I have, like, kids one day, I'll be like, you know, yeah, I danced with James Whiteside, and I danced with these people.
And now and he's dead.
And he's dead now. But, you know, that is a kind of like a bucket list thing almost for a dancer, especially in New York. Like, to meet Twyla and to work with Twyla would be amazing.
She's amazing.
I mean, I actually, I think I said I hadn't met her. I have met her, but I haven't worked with her. And she was very kind, and she was very in character of what I've heard of her.
Oh, yeah. She's always Twyla. Twyla's gonna Twyla.
Yeah, yeah.
Anybody else?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I off the top of my head, I'm like,
has Ratmansky ever made anything on you?
No, he's never choreographed anything on me. No,
well, that needs to happen. I'm manifesting that for you.
I've worked with him quite a few times before, but I've never had something set on me. That would be really interesting.
That's like pretty peak for a ballet dancer.
Yeah. I think especially dancing a lot of ballets for him. And knowing who it was set on is really interesting, because you can so much tell something like Piano Concerto was set on Ivan Vasiliev, and this was set on Daniel Simkin, and it's almost obvious, which I like in a choreographer. I like, you know, maybe typecast isn't the right word, but I like it when choreographers come in and they understand the dancer that's in front of them, and they set choreography that best suits them. Yes. I think that's okay.
I want that too, you know? Yeah. Like, if someone's making a dance on me, I don't want it to not suit my body and my abilities. Like,
Then
I'll just feel like a garbage dancer, you know?
I would argue it's part of the choreographer's job to really know the dancer before they, you know, enter the studio.
Boom. I mean, yes, but it's... I also, as I've made a couple dances myself, and...
It's not always that way.
You don't always... go into a situation knowing every single dancer, and it's not often that you do know every single dancer. I've been really lucky to work with ABT a couple times, but then the other times when I've gone and I've made dances for people I've literally never met before, I'm sussing out their abilities, like, in real time, and I'm like, okay, like, what's your best pirouette?
No, it's actually, I should add that, like, that makes a great choreographer great, is, like, it's, like, how they can, like problem solve in the moment, because I think some of the most talented choreographers I've ever met, even my own grandmother, my father's mother, she did the most incredible pieces of choreography on kids that just could not do much of anything, and she could come up with something that was so entertaining and satisfying to watch. And I think it's like just a you know, all great choreographers have that in common too. So yes, in a perfect world, it's like, you should know your dancer, and that'll help the choreography, sure, but I do also, on the flip side of that, think that that is a massive skill.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
I think that's a great place to take a little break. We'll be right back.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BADLANDSranch.com/save50 today. If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we're back on the stage right side with Jake Roxander, ABT soloist. And I want to talk to you about your family. You live, or you exist within a ballet family, which sounds truly like my nightmare. So your father and mother were both professional dancers?
My father was a professional.
Where did he work? In Canada or
National
something?
Ballet, yeah. Of Canada. Yeah, he was a principal there. He danced there for 20 years. And my mom didn't dance professionally. She danced in California and started teaching really young. And that's kind of how she met my dad. My dad was actually teaching.
And your grandmother was your dad's mother was a choreographer, or is she a dancer herself, or what's
Yes, she was a dancer. She didn't dance necessarily professionally, but she was a jack of all trades. Mm. And I just come from a huge family of artists. Most of my family members have at least dabbled in dancing along with other things. So, a big family of artists.
Okay, tell me your favorite thing about being in a dance family.
Well, first and foremost, I feel for me personally, very fortunate to have a dance family. I think it's brought us closer versus the opposite, which is not always the case. And I think that's my favorite thing about it, is that we have a kinship and we relate on so many levels, but it's not just that we relate and we understand, you know, my father or my mother understands what I say when I'm like, oh, I miss that pirouette and, you know, whatever. But it's not just that, but it's like to actually share a dream with your other family members, just it brings you close like nothing else. Mm. It's like having a best friend and you're both kind of chasing the same thing, you know.
So you have to kill them.
Exactly. So they're your competition, and you just, you know, it's
just do a couple murders, you know, and move on.
When your friend's sleeping, you just have to. So I think that's really something that's special. It's like to share a dream is a really incredible thing, and the fact that me and my brother both wore my father's costume, like for the role of Puck in Sir Frederick Ashton's The Dream. Like, my father's exact costume from National Ballet of Canada. Like, That's like a cherry on top. That's just like ridiculous. I don't know how that happens, but it's just brought us so close.
Has it been difficult? I don't know. I think it'd be really hard to have one of my siblings be A, the same gender as me, and B, in the same field. Like, I feel like it would be really hard to compete with one of my brothers for like companies or parts or like attention. Mm-hmm. Is that difficult for you two? Do you have a good working familial relationship?
I think we really do. And you know, we're in two different companies, so we're in two different worlds. So you know, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's a little bit of a bummer. Like I would love to work with my brother more. I love sharing the stage with him when I'm home. Mm. But no, I think if there's any competition between the two of us, it's healthy competition.
Yeah.
And you know, me being the younger brother by 4 years, it's like I've always kind of looked up to my brother. So it's kind of this unreachable thing in a way. So I don't feel competition ever in that sense. I think we help each other out where we need to be helped, and we bond over things that you know, we share, like Puck, and like sometimes we share certain roles, like you know, the upper room. Okay. There's a chance I might do his part,
because
we have the same setter.
Is
Philadelphia Ballet.
So, also, I am very curious to hear what some of the toughest things about being in a ballet family are.
You know, tough but very good. I'm very grateful for. I think having parents that know how hard it's going to be for you to be quote-unquote successful in this career it was tough. It was, you know, it was I had a great childhood, but also like I had to sacrifice a lot naturally in order to chase this dream that so many people want.
Tale as old as time.
Right It's like, and in ballet it's like, it's not even, you know, American football. It's American. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, okay, you got to compete with the other 49 states. It's like, no, ballet is a global thing. So you're competing with, you know, some little boy in Cuba who lives in a studio apartment with his 12 brothers and sisters. It's like, he wants it pretty bad, you know. A lot of people, it's their ticket out. You know, yeah, like, it's like, yeah, I don't know.
I don't know about that. I don't know about all that. I think in ballet, we drink the Kool-Aid so readily, and I think regardless of sort of home situations, I don't know, I think the way people work can be informed by their home life or their privilege or their lack of privilege, but I think the culture of ballet is a cult, and it's really beautiful and important and artistically fulfilling in some ways, and I think it can really be harmful in other ways. That being said, I love what I do, and I'm really grateful for everything that it's given me. But like you said, the sacrifices are very real, especially when you're a young person and you don't quite understand like what you're sacrificing until you see other people your age, and you're like, Oh, that looks way more fun than what I'm doing.
Yes.
And so you say your family understands that sacrifice, but you still haven't told me what you don't like about being in a ballet family.
I really don't not like any of it. I think it was like, you know, it was hard, but like I was saying, just like sacrificing a little bit of your social life, and I didn't go to parties, and I didn't hang out with friends all the time, and I did my two ballet classes every single day with my other contemporary classes and my rehearsals, and so that was hard at the time, but for my family, there's a huge philosophy in my house of like delayed gratification matters, where it's like, you know, you have to be disciplined and do what you don't want to do right now in order to be happier later. And I like want to say that you know, I sacrificed a lot of things in my youth in order to work harder and keep moving forward and improving in my ballet. But it's so funny that, like, now that I'm kind of here, so to speak, it's not that I've arrived and I have found success and everything works perfectly. It's still a challenge. But it's like all of those things like came naturally. Now it's like my social life is my work life. Mm. And I go on tour with my friends and I hang out with my friends all the time. And, you know, I get to do things like this. Like, this is, it's an incredible thing. And it was so worth it.
The height of your career.
This is the height. There is nothing better.
It's only down from the stage right side.
So I don't know. It's hard. There's nothing I don't like about being in a ballet family per se.
I have seen some real train wrecks of ballet families, so I commend you, and I am pleased for you.
I'm just like purely grateful for it all, because it's really all my parents. My parents are just, you know, lovely people, and I love them very much. And I love my family, but it's, you know,
it's beautiful.
I love
my family too. They just don't really care about ballet, which is also beautiful.
You know it. You win some, you lose some, but it's like everything happens for a reason.
Everything happens for one reason.
For one reason, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, quote James Whiteside.
Okay.
I don't know where to go with the raisin bit.
Oh, God. Do you know what you're doing in the fall season?
Not exactly. Mm. I would love to be in Upper Room.
Okay, we're manifesting. I did this with Chloe as well.
I'm manifesting.
Manifesting Upper Room. I hope Twyla comes and coaches.
That would be awesome, mm-hmm. Yeah. So that would be really fun. Etudes, mm-hmm. You know, we'll return to that. Yeah. Yes, I've done Etudes. That's one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. That was another one that my dad did all the time. Same part. So
you did this guy, right?
Exactly, yeah. Yes, Mazurka.
I've done that one, too. I can't say I was very good.
I'm sure that's not
true. I was fine. I was serviceable.
It's fun. It's great.
It was
fun. The music
fun.
Is awesome.
Yeah. Banger. Straight up banger.
It's a banger.
It's very like John Williams does ballet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But who's the composer?
Of Etudes?
Yeah.
I don't remember either. I'm terrible with those things.
What do we know? Nothing. Names. But we sure can dance. What are your summer plans?
I'm going home.
And where's home?
Oregon, Medford, Oregon.
I knew that, but I was just doing it for my listeners.
Yes, in case anyone's wondering.
Mm-hmm.
Medford, Oregon, and then I'm going to work with my parents.
Are you taking
a
Conestoga to Oregon?
Excuse me?
Are you going to be taking a Conestoga on the Oregon Trail back to Oregon?
I'm going to be taking a plane.
So you probably won't have to ford the river, and your horses are going to die, and you might get dysentery? You have no idea what I'm talking about because 700 years old. You've never heard of Oregon Trail?
Well, I've heard of the Oregon Trail, yes, of course.
It's a computer game from like
the 90s. You mean that Oregon Trail?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I had no idea what you're talking about.
It's like you have died of dysentery.
Yes, remember that sacrifice? Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
It was his
there was
oxen.
Not there was not a lot of video games. We had Wii Resort, and that was about it. So,
oh my God, Wii Resort? That's a good one.
It was a pretty good one.
You had a Wii?
We only had a Wii.
Only
my
had
parents,
a Wii? That's
my
iconic.
Parents said, okay,
about?
At least they're standing up. And then they found out that was not the case very quickly.
Yeah.
As we sat on the couch with our Wii remotes, so.
Oh, I love video games. I'm literally a child.
I do too.
Here at ABT, we have one of our core members, Nathan Vent. Shout out to Big Nate! he brings his Switch in and hooks it up to the TV in the lounge, and we play Smash or Mario Kart during breaks, and it is truly the best.
It's great.
Especially after, like, hard rehearsals to just meet up with your buddies in the lounge and, you know, beat each other up on screen. It's really fun.
Just turn it into a marshmallow.
Yes, exactly. Okay, you gotta go get ready for the show. It's almost half hour on a Wednesday. This is episode 5 of The Stage Right Side. This is Jake Roxander. You can follow him on Instagram at Jake Roxander, correct?
Yes.
Jake's not short for anything, right?
Jacob.
Really?
Technically, yeah.
It's not,
Jacoby.
Jaquelius.
Jacqueline.
Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis Roxander.
Yes, JKO is named after me.
I knew it.
I don't know if you knew that, but
you're actually you're Benjamin Button.
Yes.
You were born really old and now
I'm
100 years later. Things are derailing here on the Stage Right Side. Y'all come back now, you hear? Thank you so much for coming on, Jake.
Anytime. Yeah, this was fun.
Hell yeah.
Happy to do it again.
Bye y'all.
Ciao.
Oh, also, before I forget, don't you dare touch that dial on your old-timey TV. because I'm looking to get some fresh new podcast equipment for this here podcast on the Stage Right Side. And you can click in the show notes and donate to this podcast so I can get fierce new microphones so the sound quality can be upgraded, hunty. So I would love it. You give $5, $10, $15 million, $17 million. Thank you.
Yes. Then they'll be able to hear how nasally I really sound.
Yeah.
How nasally I really sound. Hi.
It'll be even more nasally next time.
All right, you got it. There it is. Bye, guys. Make sure to follow me at James B. Whiteside on Instagram and TikTok. That's James B. Whiteside. And don't forget to click the link in my bio to purchase tickets for upcoming performances or to buy my book, Center Center, a funny, sexy, sad, almost memoir of a boy in ballet. Enjoy!
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.